We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
Good morning. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast today. I would know I'm a bit late, but would be remiss if I didn't comment on the passing of Hulk Hogan. I got a little ahead of my podcast episodes here, so this is actually the first one I'm recording since Hulk Hogan passed away. Like Ozzy Osbourne, right? Chuck Mangione, the guy from The Cosby Show, and Hulk Hogan all in one week. Grim Reaper was working. Hulk Hogan represents this really special time in my childhood. You know, this time of like me and my cousins going over to my grandpa's house to watch wrestling, or going over to my house or my cousin's house or wherever to watch wrestling. And, you know, just these really incredible moments, like running around the living room, pretending it's a wrestling ring, mimicking what they're doing on TV, which is probably a big part of the reason why, like, they have the warning now that says, don't try this at home. Back then, I don't think they had that warning. We were all trying it at home. But not only that, but like a lot of times my parents, as an incentive for my brother and I, on a Friday night after a week of school, might say, hey, we'll go to Starlight Video, which was our Blockbuster in Conneaut, Ohio. Hey, we'll go to Starlight Video Friday after school if you guys have a good week. You know, there's no, like, get good grades. There's no disciplinary issues or anything. You know, just good reviews from your teachers. If the week went well, you're good at home, blah, blah, blah. Do your homework. We'll go Friday to Starlight. You can rent something. And we would go, and probably half the time we would rent, you know, like an old Royal Rumble or an old WrestleMania or something, and just watch Hulk Hogan versus Macho Man, Hogan versus Andre from WrestleMania 3, Hogan versus Warrior. I mean, all of that was just the center of Hulkamania for so long. And then, you know, so as a kid watching that, but then growing up, kind of coming of age, still being a wrestling fan, the NWO, watching Hollywood Hulk Hogan and the NWO take over wrestling, watching Hogan turn into a heel, the NWO being the coolest thing in the late 90s. It was just, you know, some of the like, I hate to say it, but like the feeling you get when you're just so entertained, like the tingles, I guess. Like you get the tingles. It's so special. The stuff you're seeing. I mean, Hogan dropping the leg at Bash at the Beach 96 might still be the single greatest moment in wrestling history. And then Hogan versus Rock at WrestleMania, oh, I don't remember what year it was, probably 20 years ago or so. Hogan versus Rock. Hogan's back in the WWE now, and they have this WrestleMania moment, and the crowd's going nuts. And it was really, you know, Hogan kind of hung on way too long, as one does in wrestling, but he did hang on a really long time, ended up back in TNA and all kinds of crap. But that moment at WrestleMania with The Rock, Hogan's clearly past his prime. He's come back home. He's going to do this big WrestleMania match. And the ovation that he got, I mean, going into that match, you know, I think they thought it would be Rock as the good guy, Hogan as the bad guy. I think Hogan was a bad guy at the time, but nonetheless, it was a novelty match. It would be cool to see Hulk Hogan wrestle again, blah, blah, blah. But the way they tore the roof off of that place, it was as if we were 15 years in the past, and it was Hulkamania all over again, late 80s, early 90s. And the moment where The Rock is going to do, I think it's the People's Elbow, and Hogan hulks up and, you know, drops the leg on The Rock and does the ear to the crowd in three different places and just rips the roof off of that place, was the last time Hogan gave me the tingles. And then I come to find out in the last 10 years or so, he's done some pretty nasty things. Truth is, you know, I watch wrestling a little bit now. I watch maybe pay-per-views, and honestly, at this point, maybe just the big ones, like Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and like Survivor Series, pretty much all I'm watching these days. And I understand Hulk Hogan went down a whole different road, and it got political with him, and I know there were racist comments, and I know he got into some lawsuit with Bubba the Love Sponge, and just a lot of drama and crap. And to be honest with you, I haven't looked into any of it. I'm sure if I did, it would probably make me hate the guy. I have no idea. But what I know is what I felt as a kid and how special it was, and how Hulk Hogan was really just at the center of so much of it. So I just wanted to do a quick kind of, you know, eulogy, I guess, of that. And I realize I'm so late on this, but I'm recording a bit ahead this summer as I've had a busy summer. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. You are appreciated very much. We'll switch gears here a little bit. This is a guy who, truth is, I did not know prior to meeting on this day for this podcast. I didn't know Anthony. Certainly had started to see him pop up all over the place, really blowing up. Was a bit surprised to hear that it's been around for a decade. Eat Local New York has been around for 10 years, 8 years really, where he says he's been going hard. And I'm a little bit surprised to hear that, because I really have only maybe caught on in the last few months. But hey, that's life, right? Things slow build. I mean, I've had the exact same experience here at Craft Cannery. I've had people come up to me pretty recently telling me, you know, things like, wow, real overnight success. And every time I hear that, I go, it's been 11 years since I packed up that trunk with the 10 by 10 tent and 15 cases of sauce. You know, like it has not been an overnight success in my experience, and neither in Anthony's, but he's really blowing up. Anthony Tringale is Eat Local New York. Enjoy. Well, I'm sitting across from the celebrity. My goodness, I can't even believe I'm seeing you in real life. It's crazy. Look at you. Do we use the real name? That's my question number
yeah,
one.
You can use the real
name. Because I love the real name. Because you're one. You know, you're one of us. A Tringale.
Right. Yeah.
Tringale.
Yeah, man.
You're a sauce maker yourself, I assume, with that last name.
I mean, you know, I've got my dad's recipe. You know, that kind of stuff.
So. What's the secret? What do you do?
I don't know if Dad really has a secret necessarily. A lot of garlic. You know.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Drown it in onion and garlic oil. We use bell peppers in ours, too, which is like our weird different thing.
Yeah.
Basil, a lot of fresh basil. That's why I love this time of year with the fresh basil outside,
for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
What does it feel like? I just gave you a little tour of the plant, and I was seriously curious if it was going to happen or not.
Yeah.
We go down there, and one of my guys walks up to you, and he goes, hey, I see your video, right? Are you getting to the point now where you can't go out in public?
No, it's not like that. I mean, definitely out here in Rochester, it's more so than it is in other parts of the state. But I was down in Park Slope, Brooklyn a few months ago, and at Luigi's Pizzeria, and a guy comes out and he's like, hey, I watch all your videos. I'm like, why? but no, Rochester is definitely like far more embracing than other parts of the state.
Where are you actually from? Like, where do you live?
Yeah, so I'm based in Syracuse.
You're born and raised there, or?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. So I was born and raised in northern Kentucky, where we lived until I was 13. And then we moved to Syracuse, where my dad's originally from.
Which high school?
I went to West Hill.
Okay. And like, what if I walked up to you on your graduation day from high school, Anthony, what are you going to be when you grow up?
I was planning on becoming like a minister, like a pastor.
Notice the tattoo. You've got Jesus tattoo. What's the other one?
This says forgiven, and this is like a Greek thing, sozo, for Christianity.
Beautiful.
So that was sort of the plan. I thought I was going to be doing that with the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. Left, graduated high school, went and got a job as a third shift cook at Denny's in Syracuse at 18 years old.
Nice.
And saved up money to move to a place called Middletown, Ohio.
Yeah.
Famous only for former steel plants and J.D. Vance. I interned at a church there, and for a couple of years, moved back to Syracuse, moved to Texas.
Well, hold on. Can I go back to Denny's for a second?
Yeah.
Overnights at Denny's.
Yeah.
I mean, tough. That's the drunk crowd, sure, right? You got the drunks. But did you create, I mean, you had to get creative with food back there, right? You
I mean, not at Denny's. No.
No, no. I worked at McDonald's when I was a kid. Okay. And all the stuff that you see online now, people are like, oh, the double filet or the Big Mac with the, I'm like, I invented that when I was a teenager, man. You kidding me? A fat kid working at McDonald's? Like, when I, you know, like, oh, did you do it at Denny's where you putting?
No. I mean, at 18 years old, at 18 years old, third shift cook at a Denny's, you know, you're surrounded by not other 18 year olds, you know, it's like not, that's not a pretty common post high school job for most people in America, I think. So I was working with like, you know, 50 year olds, 60 year olds, alcoholics, you know, chain smokers.
That was the next thing I was going to ask you is how do you stay committed to Jesus when you're overnights at Denny's? Because I imagine you're around a lot of people that aren't committed to Jesus.
For sure. I mean, I was exposed to Neil Young and cigarettes at that, you know, at that stage of my life. So it was a cool time. I mean, I was only there for maybe 4 months before I moved, but, and I don't think I really learned a whole hell of a lot besides, you know, take care of your regular sort of a thing in the restaurant industry. But it was a fun time, you know, something I kind of look back on fondly. And, yeah, man. So I've lived there. I've lived Texas. I've lived, you know, Southern California for a small, small stint.
And so then, what were the jobs throughout? I mean, is it always in ministry or like?
Yeah, more. I mean, when I was in Ohio interning at the church, I worked. My day job was commercial construction, like low voltage until I was like 21. And then oddly enough, at 21, I opened a I moved back to Syracuse. I opened up a furniture store.
Awesome.
At 21. It wasn't awesome. It was awful. It was a terrible, stupid idea that did not pan out.
So what went wrong? What happened?
Here with you. What went wrong? A 21-year-old opened a furniture store. That's what went wrong.
Yes.
In 2008, nonetheless.
So oh, yeah.
How many people were buying mattresses from a 21-year-old in 2008? The answer is none. And so that's why I'm not a mattress influencer. I went to work for Metro Mattress. So I've spent 10 years at Metro Mattress collectively throughout my life, and I'm working for them. And
Have you ever seen the online like conspiracy theories about mattress stores that they're all fronts because it's that they're all like money laundering fronts because basically because like how are there so many mattress stores?
Yeah.
Like how many mattresses actually get sold in a day?
I mean, it may not be a lot in a day, but the margin's crazy.
I would imagine. Yes.
You know? I mean, you might sell a mattress for $4,000 that costs like hard cost is, I don't know, 400.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's pretty good.
You know, you don't have to sell many of those to keep the lights on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, bottled condiments, it's the opposite. It's the exact opposite of that. Oh, God. Okay, all right. So you dabble in entrepreneurism, though, before the Metro Mattress thing.
Yeah.
Metro Mattress is 10 years of your life?
Yeah, I mean, I worked there. My furniture store shut down in, like, end of 08. I was, like, 21, maybe just turned 22. I went to work at Metro for, I think, 5 or maybe 6 years before I wound up moving out to Texas and went to work at a church out there. And, yeah, I was there for 3 years and just didn't, you know, at the end of those 3 years, like, Texas is a can be a rough place for a Yankee. So so I was excited to get back to the Northeast and move back to Syracuse, and that was 10 years ago, so.
And so what's been going on for 10 years? I mean, Eat Local starts. What's like, what's the day you posted your first video as Eat Local New York?
Yeah, that was about 8 years ago. So when I moved back to from Texas, I went and got a job back at Metro Mattress. And, you know, it's a great company, but you're just as an employee, you're sitting around doing nothing. Like you work a 9 hour shift. You may only work for like an hour that day.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, you're just sitting there waiting for a customer to come in.
So it is a money laundering.
Allegedly. So I was sitting there at work one day with a good friend of mine. We were bored watching Netflix, and I said to him, "We should start a side hustle." And he was like, "Well, you know, what do we know how to do?" I knew social media from working at the mega church, and he was a photographer. So I said, "Let's do social media management." And so this is 2015 in Syracuse, like, you know, restaurants in Syracuse weren't doing anything on social media. Like most of them were just posting blurry pictures of their menu, which some of them are still doing it today. No one in Syracuse is running a Facebook ad, in the restaurant industry. So, So we started that. It's just like a side hustle. We got a couple clients.
So you would go into a restaurant and you would say, hey, let's step up your game. We can make it look good on social. Right. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you would actually you'd manage their accounts.
Yeah.
You'd do the posting, the tweeting, whatever, yeah. all of it.
So, so that was pretty much it. We were charging next to nothing. We had like two or three accounts. And then
is that also you building the foundation of understanding like what will resonate, what will not, you know, what do people want to see?
Yeah, I think so. You know, and that changes so much even nowadays, but, you know, and it's been sort of an interesting progression for social media for restaurants from 10 years ago to today. You know, then it was really like you'd get away with just like the same picture, which you still can to a certain extent, but, just the same picture over and over again, just with paid ads, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we were just spending $150 a month on Facebook ads for a local diner and like getting massive results for
them.
And so, 2 years into doing that business, I met a restaurant owner who never should have opened a restaurant. Like, in my opinion, you know, probably 40% of them, you know, shouldn't open the restaurant that they did. But she had a great job at a bank, you know, branch manager or assistant branch manager or something, made a good living, benefits, but she loved to cook for her friends and family and she was good at it. And they kept telling her, you should, you know, quit your job, follow your passion, mm-hmm. you know. And so she fell for it, is what I like to say, and believed them and opened up a restaurant that she shouldn't have opened. And she could make great food, but she sucked at everything else in the restaurant, you know, ownership and just, you know, part of it. So I met her 6 months into being open for her restaurant. A friend of a friend was like, she needs help. Go see if you can help her. And I left that meeting and thought, I wish I had an Instagram account I could post right now and get 50 people to show up. Like, it's not going to change her life, but it's going to, you know, give her some, you know, encouragement and get some money in the door. And that night is when I started the Instagram account for Eat Local New York.
That's your light bulb moment. Yeah. Walking out there and going, I wish. That's so cool. I love a good light bulb moment.
Yeah.
Now, without saying her name, is she still around or did that not work out? Or like, what?
Yeah, she shut the restaurant down like a month or two after that and then pivoted into a food trailer. And so she still exists today with the food trailer.
Oh, in the trailer. Okay, so she found it. You know, so like sometimes, you know, it takes that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, well, look at you, right? You're a failed furniture salesman, right? Like, now you're successful at this. Like, we all kind of have to, you know, fail a couple times before you find the success.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I love that that's the moment of like, oh, I wish I could just tell everyone right now about this thing.
Yeah.
And they would know. So what's the very first video then for Eat Local?
Man, I don't know what that first video was, but I started posting videos maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Didn't really know what to do. Those videos probably sucked really bad. I mean, some of the videos today suck really bad. But yeah, those videos, I wasn't putting myself on camera. I like to tell people I'm a, you know, shoot first, aim later type of a guy. If I see a problem, I'm just like, what is the quickest solution? I don't care if it's the best, what's the quickest? And so for me, from posting photos, then the problem was I need to start posting videos. The quickest solution was camera in front of my face. Hey, I'm here. I'm eating this. Mm-hmm. This is what I think about it. You should try it. Goodbye. And, you know, the good thing about that is, like, you know, that's usually what big brands like and people like to engage with is mm-hmm. you know, a spokesperson, so to speak. The bad thing is the channel has turned into me eating food saying wow. If it's not me eating food saying wow, people don't really care too much for it. So yeah,
can we unpack the idea of fastest versus best also, because I always think that's kind of an interesting thing about going to market with something. Is it better to go to market first or is it better to go to market with the best? What do you think? It's arguments to be made on both sides. I mean, first to market is a phrase for a reason.
For sure.
But I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
It depends on so many different things, like what it is, where it is, how it is. I'm definitely a, you know, shoot first, aim later. And I think that like that can do well in some areas. Like there's some people that, you know, I've employed over the years or, clients I've had where it's like, they take forever to try and find a solution to something. And I'm just like, what are you doing? Just go do this.
Yeah.
You know, go put the Band-Aid on. And so I'll just find the quickest way to the solution. It may not be the best, but at least I'll get it done. I have a business partner in a new business, and he's more of a, you know, take your time and aim type of a guy, which is a great balance.
It is, yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that's sort of my superpower, is like just finding the way to get stuff done, because there are so many people that just take forever to take action and move.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if one's, you know, bad, or, you know, I don't know which option is better. I'll definitely make maybe more mistakes on the way to the solution, but I'll get there a little faster.
Yeah. Well, you just said it, the balance you have with your partner. I think that's great. Truth be told, I have a partner here at this business, and I think maybe it's a similar thing, to tell you the truth. I'm a little bit more sort of risk taker, you know, sort of like textbook entrepreneur of like, let's try it, let's do it, you know. And he's a little bit more like, hold on.
Yeah.
Is this in our core competency? Do we know how to do this? Mm-hmm. Is this going to make us money? And I'm just like, you know, and the truth is in the middle somewhere.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, you got to ask those questions. Thank God he's here.
Yeah.
But also, like, if you ask those questions and you never stop asking those questions, you never go anywhere. You just keep spinning your wheels, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it's definitely something in between. You mentioned business partner. So like, what is the business? I don't mean to get too personal, but like, what's going on? Like, is he local full-time job at this point? Like,
what's eLocal's been full-time now for 4 years, I think. 4 years.
How cool was that moment where you're like, I think this thing can sustain me? Like,
you know, I made the decision to not sell the business, and that's what launched me in full-time. So I was working for a company in Syracuse at the time called Gerhard's Equipment, which is like a restaurant equipment, smallwares company. And super, super, super old school. I got hired. I started with them like the week before the pandemic as their marketing person, and they'd never had a marketing director before. So I was there with them, and then the social media management business just like started to take off. And I had restaurants calling me, it seemed like every week, wanting to, you know, hire me to come manage their social. And so that was becoming too much. It was like more than I was making from Gerhard's in restaurant in monthly billings. And my idea was, because I had the furniture store that, you know, failed, I've always been big risk averse. And so I'll take small, like calculated things, but I won't like go take out $1 million loan to go build something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to jump out and go full force, just like, hey, I'm making more money, goodbye, because the restaurant industry is so flighty, you know, like they're here today, gone tomorrow. So I pitched the owner of Gerhard's on purchasing the marketing side of eLocal New York, and then him launching into that side of the business. Like, hey, listen, you know, you can sell them the equipment, you can design their restaurant, sell them the equipment, sell them the booth and the bowls and the pots and the pans, and you can do their social media marketing for them. And he liked the idea. He made me an offer that was a pretty generous offer to buy that side of the business and give me a promotion in it, and then give me a promotion at the company. And then I would keep the influencer side of eLocal New York. And I was toying with the idea of doing it. I mean, I was going back and forth for like 2 months, and you know, my wife was sort of the encourager to say like, don't do it, just quit and go do this on your own. And so I did, you know. I kind of go back and forth on if I wish I'd sold or not.
You never know for sure. You stick with the road you chose. And
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. You never know for sure.
Yeah.
But before eLocal existed, I mean, there were, you use the word influencer, right? These days, influencer, content creator. Like, what do you guys prefer these days?
One, I don't really. You
know, either one.
Whatever gets the point across to somebody what I am.
Well, so it existed, right? Like, there were people doing this. Were you in any, did you just kind of like say, I'm going to forge my own path? Or were you actually watching some of that and sort of analyzing, like, here's what I like, here's what I don't like? Like, what did you think?
No, not really. I wasn't like really analyzing much. If I can, I mean, my nephew sitting here, Jack, can attest. So we were listening to a podcast on this, you know, for the last 2 days. I still don't get it. I still don't understand it, you know, in terms of the you know, larger world of influencer. I'm not a normal influencer, though, to the extent where, like, I don't get paid by a strong majority of the restaurants that I post for, you know, on my page.
Mm-hmm.
So a normal influencer, like, I follow the Las Vegas market, and all of the influencers out there have got like hundreds of thousands and millions of followers, and pull a lot of advice from them on just how they grow their business. And out there, it's a completely different world. Like, they're not posting about a restaurant unless they're getting paid, and getting paid a substantial amount of money. you know, the world of influencers is the industry standard is a company would pay someone like me one penny for every follower that I have for one post. So I've got 200,000 followers. I could charge a company $2,000 just for one post on my page. Mm-hmm. In our industry and like with restaurants, I don't see how I could do that. And even upstate New York, by and large, is so behind the times and everything that even the companies I talk to just don't understand, you know, how worth it that could be, mm-hmm. you know? And so I it's not like I can get that rate, those rates, or try to. For me, when it comes to restaurants, which is, you know, like what I post about, I show up for free 95% of the time.
Do they even know you're coming most of the time?
Sometimes. Or? I've got a long list of restaurants on my phone of all across the state of places to get to.
Yes.
And
I mean, can I just tell you, I made myself a rule for this.
Yeah.
Knowing I was going to meet you, I told myself the one thing you cannot say to this guy is, you know what you need to try? Because yeah. I know everyone you run into goes, you know where you need to go. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got that list, and you know, when a new restaurant comes on or gets recommended, they used to try and keep it fair. They go at the bottom of the list.
Sure. Yeah.
And then work their way up. And when a restaurant or their marketing person or somebody reaches out from the restaurant, is like, please come try my restaurant. I usually have them email an assistant just because I'm bad at my schedule, and he'll look at the food and make sure it looks good and looks like something we're interested in. You know, if the restaurant has stock photos of their food on their website, we're not going there. You know, mm-hmm. if we don't see the food beforehand, we're not going to go. So if the food looks good, then we say, listen, you go on the list at the bottom when you're next up and we're in the area, we'll stop out for free and make a video. If we like the food, we'll post it. If we don't like the food, we'll let you know and we won't post anything.
Mm-hmm.
But we give them the option because there's some restaurants, especially nowadays, it's the world has changed so much in terms of restaurants being able to get people on their door. We give them the option to pay me to come out ahead of time. And it's not much. It's a couple $100 to like cover the gas. And then when I do that, I don't edit those videos. I send them to a freelance editor that I have, okay. you know, who's another young kid who has his own new company. And so I can help him out and help the restaurant out.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you've become, I mean, it's so good for restaurants. There's so many restaurants a handful, at least I know in Rochester, who are just like so excited that you came. And,
yeah.
You know, I know that like the Capone's is just, they love you. Like they'll do anything.
Yeah.
They think you're the best, right?
Yeah.
Like everybody just loves you so far. Yeah. Everybody loves you. But like, I'm interested in how something like this comes together. Mm-hmm. And I'm worried about what I'm about to tell you because I don't know if it's too much information. But I know you're going to Patron Saint tonight in Rochester, right? Which why I'm worried about is because if you never post about it, then we'll all know how it went.
Oh, right, yeah.
But I know you're going tonight. And my business partner here at Craft Cannery is a business partner at Patron Saint.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So a couple of days. So how do you set that up? Like, do you tell them who you are or do you just make a reservation as Anthony?
No, so that's just, that one's a little different because it's a nicer restaurant. And not that I imagine they have a rule, but I don't want to show up guns a-blazing with like a light on my phone, which I'll have because it's a dark restaurant. And I need to show the food in the video. I don't want to show up and be like the annoying jackass or douchebag that's got the light shining in their beautiful restaurant.
Influencers in the wild kind of thing. Yeah, yeah.
And so I messaged Josh online. I've never met him before a day in my life.
Great dude.
I messaged him on Instagram. I was just like, hey, dude, rare opportunity. I've had you on my list for a while or since you opened, and it's just this incredible opportunity for me to be in Rochester for the night, not for him, an incredible opportunity for me. Because we have a 2-year-old at home, so I try to never be home past 5, you mm-hmm. know, I try to be home on time for dinner.
Good job, good daddying. I like it.
But this was just a weird thing where I was going to be in town because I have to be in Buffalo early in the morning. So I was like, I'm staying the night, I'm coming in for dinner. I just want to make sure you're okay if I bring a light, and like, if I'm going to make a reservation, could you seat me in the back corner so I don't disturb your other guests?
Oh, that's really considerate, actually. Yeah, that's wonderful.
I mean, the last thing.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to Patron saying it's their like 20th anniversary, and then I'm sitting next to them saying wow with a light in their face. You know, so I just don't want to be annoying.
Okay.
And so this is, it's a, So I fully anticipate. I mean, I already calculated what I'm going to be spending tonight at dinner, like before I message Josh.
Yeah.
And
it's great. It's great. It ain't cheap, right. But it's great.
Like I fully plan on, I want to feature the best because it's going to be a video that'll do well.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I'm going to spend $1,000 on dinner. Cool. I'm good with
it. Wait, how many people are you bringing?
Just me and Jack.
Oh, thousands. But, I mean, even 1,000 you might beat. Jack, how excited are you, by the way? His nephew's here, I got to say. How old is your nephew?
Jack's 15.
Bro, you're going to love this restaurant.
He just had his first cheeseburger 2 days ago.
What?
Yes, that's the kind of, so
Jack. Hold on a second. Jack, can you come over here? Jack, can we talk to you? Can you sit in that seat right there? Your first cheeseburger in 15 years?
Jack's a very picky eater.
What about, you never went to McDonald's? Like, what are you doing? What, I've never, tell me this.
Chicken sandwich.
Hold that mic up. Hold it right up there.
I usually just get a chicken sandwich.
But like when you were a kid, you never tried a cheeseburger, McDonald's, Burger King, nothing, no? Man, did you do fast food as a kid?
Yeah.
But it was always chicken.
Yeah.
Nuggets? Which dipping sauce?
Barbecue.
Made in Macedon, by the way. Baldwin Richardson Foods. McDonald's dipping sauce. Locally made. I like it. Man, so what was the first cheeseburger you tried?
It was
Roosters in Utica.
Yeah.
Roosters in Utica?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the review, can I ask? It's okay. We're not live, so.
I liked it, but I would have gotten it without vegetables on it.
Oh, lettuce and tomato, vegetables, yeah. You see, that's why when you get to be my age and you get to be kind of a fat guy, I describe that to my wife as a salad. I had a salad for lunch. She doesn't even know about the beef and the cheese part and the bun and stuff. Well, real quick before we talk to your uncle again, what's it like going around with Uncle? By the way, is he Uncle Anthony or like what do you call him?
Uncle Tony.
Uncle Tony, okay, I like it. And what's it like watching him be a celebrity?
I like how some random people just know who he is.
Randomly. Yeah. Isn't that kind of cool?
They know who he is, yeah.
Does it ever get annoying, though, where you're like, come on, Tony, like, we got to go. Stop.
Yeah.
Dude, you're going to Patron Saint tonight, and your uncle's prepared to drop $1,000. You're going to eat like a king tonight, dude.
Yeah.
This is freaking. Have you studied the menu yet?
No.
Oh, he's got you covered, I think, though. He's going to order just fine. Dude, for caviar, the caviar nuggets or the other thing?
I think we're trying to get both.
Okay, caviar nuggets are pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. I just, when I heard you hadn't had a cheeseburger until 2 days ago, that's why he's skinny, though. You know what I'm saying? That's why he's skinny, and that's why we look like this, and he looks like that, you know? Handsome son of a gun.
But no, I messaged Josh, and, you know, and he set the reservation. He was like, you know, thank you. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing. Like, Josh owns, is, you know, part owner or whatever it is, and a large restaurant group in Rochester and significant restaurants, right? So, and this isn't a knock to Josh. It's just kind of like shows the sort of like the upstate New York, you know, world. Josh asked, what's etiquette here? Am I supposed to comp you? And so, you know, my response was most restaurants do, but you don't need, like, I'm not DMing you to comp me. I'm DMing you to, you know, just to ask, you know, that I can bring a light and please put me in the back somewhere. And so his response was, well, we're going to take care of you anyways. Just take care of the staff. So, in this sort of a situation, it's weird. Like, I'm going in to spend $1,000. I'm not going in asking for $1,000 of the free stuff. So I'll just tip his staff that, you know?
Yeah. And that is, by the way, I mean, you know better than I do.
Yeah.
But the small experience I have, that seems to me like what the norm, you know, at a nice restaurant.
Yes.
The etiquette would be they're going to comp your meal, but you're gonna freaking make it rain on the staff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's, it's just sort of a weird thing like that. I mean, but usually if I reach out to a restaurant and it's like, I need a cheeseburger. Yeah. They comp it. And then we just take care of the staff or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm very excited for you for tonight.
Yeah.
It's such a good restaurant. So the reason I even brought it up though, is because I tell my partner, I go, this Eat Local New York is coming. And he like logs into their reservation system and he goes, well, do you know his name? And I go, I do. And I tell him your name and he goes, oh yeah, I see. He clicks on it and it's got a bunch of notes. It's like influencer, important, VIP, treat like gold. You know?
Like,
so I feel bad telling you that ahead of time. So yeah, it's going to be good. But can I actually play devil's advocate for a second? Is there any part of you that goes, actually, maybe it'd be better if they didn't know. So I would get the true authentic, because now you know that they're going to be kind of tripping over themselves. And you're going, well, this isn't exactly.
Yeah.
And this, again, I got to be so careful. It's my business partner. Right. And I'm a huge fan. Their hospitality's through the roof. Yeah. I mean, anybody goes in there, they're going to be treated like $1 million.
Right.
But do you ever wonder in the back of your head, like, I wonder if it would actually be better if I was kind of anonymous?
If I was a critic, I would say yes. And like, you know, I mean, one of my biggest food influences is, you know, the Jonathan Gold, you know, rest in peace, massive food critic and food writer from the LA Times, only food critic to ever win Pulitzer, you know, in the history. Mm-hmm. So a guy who has spent really his entire life blowing up the ethnic restaurants of Los Angeles that like no one in shopping malls that no one ever knew existed. And then he's going in there and giving them incredible attention to detail on their food and you know, celebrating what they're doing. And so I look at him as like a massive influence in what I do, not in what I do, but just in like how I sort of think about food. And I'm not going to be a food critic. I don't really want to be a food critic, you know? I mean, I'll spend time if I don't understand the cuisine, like Googling and like just kind of trying to spend some time on the internet, like, all right, what are the flavors I should be looking for in this? So that way I'm not like, the chicken shawarma is good, you know, you should try it. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just not out there to like try and find the worst thing, you know? And I try to not post anything negative about a restaurant.
Okay. So that's just great etiquette. You're just being a good human being. Like, we don't shit on local businesses, right? Like, that's a rule, and I'm with you on that. And I love that you don't do that. So, like, of course I want to ask you, has it ever not gone well? And I'm sure the answer is yes. But, like, we're not naming names or anything like that. But my question for you is a little bit more specific than has it ever not gone well? Because obviously at some point you're going to go to a place and be disappointed. Have you – what? So you don't post the video, of course.
Yeah.
But what do you do in the moment, in real life, where it's just you in real life, in the moment, with the owner, and it's not going well? Like, how does that go?
It depends. It depends on a lot of things. Last summer, I was at a restaurant, and it was the AAA series. They sent out a ton of food to us. None of it was good. I mean, all of it was terrible. And, you know, this is a coordinated trip, so we weren't paying for anything. They had the fish fry on the plate in front of me. My cameraman is across from me filming, and I go to cut into the fish, and a spider crawls out from on the plate. And I was like, oh my God. Oh. And so my mistake in that situation was I didn't tell the restaurant owner. And when they came up, when we were done filming, they were like, how was everything? I was like, it was great, you know? Mm. And so I never posted the video, but I also never told the owner. So from that point on, I just kind of changed my own rule to, if I don't like the food, and it's a restaurant where like they were comping it, then I pay for everything and I tell them, you know, like, listen, I didn't love it. I can tell you why, but regardless, I just can't post the video. And so, yeah, so those are pretty uncomfortable situations when that happens. But yeah.
What percentage of the time is that? It's got to be small, I would imagine.
It's at least once a week.
Oh, you know, it happens that often. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
And how many, like, what? So what is that percentage-wise? How many restaurants are you doing in a week?
It could vary. I mean, you know, this week we'll probably hit up like 12. You know, some weeks it's 20. Some weeks it's only 5.
Damn. Do you ever, are you ever just like, I just want a salad? Yeah. And I mean, I know that's rare for you know, eaters.
I mean.
Like, are you ever like, all right, I don't want to go eat at a restaurant.
If I'm doing it, the funny thing is I don't go out to eat really for like, to eat. Like, I go out to make a video. And when I'm doing a video, I have like 2 bites, maybe 3 bites of the food, and then I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, you're also, they've served you 9 dinners, you know, so you're like, I only have 3. When is the last time you went out to dinner, just like with your wife or something, where you're not Eat Local, you're just Anthony, and you're just out to dinner, and you're not, you know what I mean? Like, does that ever happen?
No,
like
a year, year and a half, maybe.
You wouldn't even know how to act anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm sitting there with my wife, and I take a bite, I'm like, wow, you know.
Yeah.
She's like, what the hell are you doing? No, it's it's not often that I go out as like a consumer, because even like I have to create content. So even if I'm going out as a consumer, I'm like, all right, can I make a video out of this?
Yeah, knock one out.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. I've thought about like kind of that concept of going back like 3 times, trying a bunch of different stuff, before I do a video, but you know, that's just not what my channel is. And you know, and nowadays, man, I posted a video last November. I went to a restaurant in Syracuse. The food wasn't great, and then it was just like crazy expensive. It was like $30 for lunch. And so I posted the video only on TikTok because I thought it would do less damage on TikTok. And I really just kind of succumbed to pressure because I get comments today from people who are like, you know, we can't trust him. He doesn't tell us if the food's bad, right? So so I posted a video sitting in my car just like, hey, the food's not that great. I was hoping to love it. I've been following them for years. I've loved everything I see. The food doesn't taste great. And at $30 for lunch, it's a ripoff. Like, don't come here. And like 3 months later, the owner saw the video and started DMing me. Well, that DM was hot out of like press and then went escalated to the next time I see you in public, I'm going to murder you.
Right? Oh.
So,
oh shit, that's
extreme.
That's pretty real, know? Yeah.
And nowadays,
did you have to call the cops? Like, you had to take that seriously, right?
I didn't. I deleted the video. I was like, dude, listen, it's not that I don't believe in what I said. I was like, but if you're this is bothering you this much in your life, I'll delete the video. So, you know, and then there's, I mean, honestly, as like we progress, and like it's a new world for a lot of people, all these influencers going out and reviewing restaurants, and especially with like, you know, content that's meant to grab people's attention. Mm-hmm. There's so many influencers that are just doing the extreme just to get attention. And
yeah, you ever see the guys like jump on from rooftop to rooftop? Yeah. Every time I see that, I'm like, why?
Or what about the
it's
guy?
It's not worth it.
Everywhere like, he goes, he'll order like a steak or a lobster, and then he has a raw steak
lobster, yes.
And then it'll be, you know, so
I have seen that.
More and more influencers are getting sued from restaurants, you know, yeah. So it's just not worth the risk to go out there and be like, hey, the food sucked.
Welcome to Behind the Studio Door, where we dig into the vibrant creative landscape of Rochester, New York. Hi, I'm Molly Darling, and along with my co-host Christian Rivera and our fabulous producer Chris Lindstrom, it's my pleasure to guide you through the dynamic world of our local creative professionals. Each episode offers a unique glimpse into the studios of those who enrich our Rochester community with their artistic vision. Join us as we explore the diversity and talent in Rochester, revealing the compelling narratives and creative journeys that exist just beyond the studio door.
Hello, listeners. This is Richard B. Colon reminding you all to check out the Behind the Glass Gallery podcast hosted by myself and Kwajay Donnell. Every month, we interview the latest First Friday featured gallery artists and dive deep into their passion, drive, and motivation beyond what they display on our gallery walls each month in downtown Rochester, New York. So please, if you haven't yet, subscribe and give us a listen. Also, don't forget to check out our monthly artist receptions every first Friday of the month from 6 to 8 p.m., 240 East Main Street at the Mercantile on Main. Hoping to see you all behind the glass.
I agree with you, and there is like a grounds for suing over, is it called like loss of income or something like that, loss of income or something like that. There is like grounds for suing
for sure.
Over that. Like if somebody comes in and does it, because now you get into, does the food suck or not?
Right.
Is like inherently subjective. It is like somebody, if you thought it sucked, somebody probably actually liked that, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So that's something you could just go round and round about.
Yeah,
forever. I deal with that here with spiciness.
Yeah.
We do a lot of hot sauces, and like the number two, the top two complaints we get here are it wasn't spicy enough or it was too spicy, and they're talking about the same sauce.
Yeah,
you know, it's just so subjective.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Sure.
Okay, so I want to back up a little bit, talk about the business, because you talked about that kind of, you had a fork in the road moment. It was your old boss, right? That was maybe going to invest in half the, or he was going to buy out half the business. You didn't do that. You own full on. It's a full fledged business at this point, but you also referenced having an assistant. So like to bring me to the side of this, that isn't just you going out and eating, bring me to the side of this is you being an entrepreneur. You're running a business at this point.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Eat Local New York, you know, as the business is a marketing agency. So, you know, we manage the social media for 9 or 10 different restaurants from Utica to Rochester. And so that looks like going out, creating all the content for them, posting for them on their social media, you know, managing comments. There's a client in Syracuse that's, you know, called Harvey's Garden. It's a beer hall and food truck park. And so there I'm actually managing all of their events. I'm planning monthly events and throwing big parties. And
that's amazing.
You know, basically doing the things to help them get money, you know, get customers in the door and you know, succeed.
How big of a team do you have?
I mean, it's me. I've got my assistant. She just helps with like the sales and the scheduling for like the influencer side. And then I've got a freelance video editor.
Yeah. The video comes with you to everything or? Does the video person? Oh, they're just an editor, not a filmer. Okay.
Yeah. So his name is Dan. He's a young kid who started his own company and his own, you know, just him doing it by himself. Video creator. He edits my paid videos for Eat Local New York. So for my influencer stuff, but none for clients. I do all that.
Okay. All right. So the side of you that's running an advertising agency, a social media agency. Yeah. I mean, how is that managing? You've got 9 clients. Would you say you're open for business? If somebody calls you take on more clients?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, but nowadays it's kind of starting to get to like the right clients, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so much.
That's a good place to get, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's just the restaurant industry is tough. It's like we were talking about earlier, just so many people get into this industry and don't know what they're doing. And, you know, one of the things that they lack the most knowledge in is just marketing. And so, you know, they look at like organic social media as being the silver bullet to help me become a, you know, multi-million dollar restaurant. And it's just not how it works.
Yeah.
You know? You have to be spending a lot of money in your budget, you know, 3-6%, right? So, and I would say the average restaurant spends like 0.25% on marketing throughout the year.
And if they don't see a return within like their, like, I used to work in, I did 15 years in radio.
Okay.
And so somebody would come on the air and like their ads would start Monday and like by Wednesday, if they hadn't seen results, they'd be like, we got to pull our ads. This isn't working. You're like, dude, you got to give this. Crazy. Like the big brands are just every 11 minutes.
I know.
For every 11 minutes, every hour for years before they get that like daily recognition. Yeah. It's crazy the repetitiveness that's required. Yeah. But anyway, the side of your business where you're managing social media accounts for everybody is fascinating to me because I see the product. Everybody sees the product. The product is you being an influencer. But running a business at the same time, it seems really hard. Like, are you 24/7, 365? Like, when are you resting?
I mean, I wake up, you know, we're out the door at 7. You know, that's when, you know, we take our son to daycare. My wife goes to work. I go to work. You know, so out the door at 7, home at 5. And, you know, my wife and my son go to bed at like between 7:30 and 8:30. And then... I work until 11 or 12, sometimes 1 if it's a crazy week, and then wake up and do it all over again, you know?
I'm not asking you to give away the secrets here, but just in general, Instagram, TikTok, what works? You mentioned earlier, you made a little bit of a reference of like, it's always changing and I'm just a viewer. I don't know how any of it works, but I see the influencers talking about the algorithm changed or what's the other thing? Shadow banning. They talk about shadow banning. Like is there any just like tried and true rules that you've seen of like every single time, if you do this, it works?
Yeah.
Or is there some luck involved?
Yeah, I don't want to say it's luck, but it's definitely like testing. It's A/B testing a lot for content. You have to figure out, like, you have to create video content. You can't post photos. You can't post crappy, like, AI-driven graphics anymore, you know? And you also have to understand, like, what's the difference between content that's going to get people in my seat and content that's going to get people to like it? Because they're not the same thing, you know? This trend of like this CEO and his mistress from the Coldplay concert and like here's actually a better example that'll relate to people in Rochester, the Bobcat.
Yeah.
And I love Pizza Wizard. Like he's hilarious. He's come after me a couple times, but I think he's hilarious.
He listens to this, by the way.
Does he?
So, yeah.
I absolutely love 1000% of what he does on social media.
He's great. He's great.
I had messaged him like, or when are you going to chime in on the Bobcat thing? And like he put out on his end, like, I think every restaurant who does anything regarding that is an idiot and is making, and it's true.
Yeah.
Because, all right, 1,000 people might like that post and you might reach 30,000 people. If you can name one person that walked into your restaurant and bought your food as a result of you posting about the Bobcat, I will do your social media for free for a year. It doesn't exist.
That's great.
And so, you know, there is a difference between content that drives results and drives sales and content that drives likes. And they're two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say if you're a restaurant owner listening to this, maybe the 3 things you should do and not do: stop using hashtags. If you add a hashtag to a post, you kill your post.
Oh, that's old now? That's beyond? Sorry, I mean, I'm an old guy. I don't know.
It's been around for, it's been this way for like the last 6 months to a year.
Okay.
If you add a hashtag on Facebook or Instagram, they purposefully lower the reach that that post gets.
Wow,
Yeah, it's just, and I still see restaurants that are like using 50 of them.
Yeah.
You know, and
they didn't
posts.
Get the memo. Yeah.
Yeah. Stop following trends. Do not post a trending video. If you see another restaurant post, you know, throwing whipped cream in somebody's face, a staff member's face because they got the order wrong sort of a thing. Another one of the how people think a restaurant owner walks in versus how they really walk in. Yeah. Any trend that you find out there, if you recreate it, it will not drive customers into your restaurant.
Yeah.
I guarantee it. It might get likes, but that doesn't do anything for your business. So stop doing those two things. And the third thing is really just, and this is the most important in all advertising, know who your customer is, know who your, know your avatars.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a restaurant in a neighborhood that serves food that's, you know, targeting moms, you know, from 30 to 45 who are on the go, then know that and then create content that's going to attract them into your restaurant.
That's really good advice. The piece about knowing who your customer is something that, like, when almost anybody starts a business, especially young people, inexperienced entrepreneurs, I did the exact same thing. What do you say? Who's your customer? Everybody. Everybody says, oh, everybody's my customer. And I'm sitting here now, I'm 11 years into having a business. And for the last few years, I felt very confident. I have a very specific customer. Yeah. Like if I'm going to be a salesman and go target somebody, there's only like a dozen customers in the country that are like the exact customer that I really want, you know? And you saw like what we're making.
Yeah.
Like that's what I'm talking about. Like that exact thing. It's gotta be like that size of a business doing that exact thing.
Yeah.
And there's only so many of those, right?
Yeah.
But this idea of it being everybody is something that I think early business owners, rookies, or like you said, inexperienced restaurant owners who start, they start just blanket like everybody.
Right. Yeah.
But you're right. I don't think that is though. You got to target somebody specific, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are some restaurants. I mean, listen, Bill Gray's might attract everybody to a certain extent within, a 4 mile radius of each location. But, you know, it's not everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that's really important. It's social media isn't really social media anymore. You know, it's really, if you're running social media, if you're running media, for a business, for a restaurant, you have to think of yourself as a entertainment company when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're not thinking that way and trying to create content that's going to entertain or maybe educate people and bring them into your door, it's just, you know, you're not really doing much. So,
What do you think it is? You mentioned earlier about how like a lot of people that you've seen a lot of restaurants that get started by somebody who kind of doesn't really know what they're doing. They think they can cook at home. So they open a restaurant. I haven't also know, and you're way closer to it than I am, but I've also noticed over the years that it's almost like low hanging fruit, the restaurant business.
Yeah.
People, it's so easy to think you can run a restaurant. It just seems like fool's gold almost. Yeah. It just seems, have you ever heard of the Dunning-Kruger effect?
Yeah.
Yes. It's the how hard could it be factor.
Right.
Everybody loves when I cook at home. How hard could it be to run a restaurant?
Yeah.
Way harder than you think, right? What are the traits you see when you walk into a new restaurant? Say something's been open 6 months or less.
Yeah.
That make you go, oh, they're actually going to make it.
Yeah. Nowadays, you know, I think it's the restaurants that I know that are constantly busy, I mean constantly busy, are the ones who are actively finding what's viral in food and recreating it. And I don't mean the content from it, I mean the food itself.
Mm.
I've got a client in Syracuse and I have a client in Rochester, and both of those restaurant owners do this. They spend hours on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, seeing what other restaurants are doing in Los Angeles, New York City, Nashville, in other large cities, and they are saying like, okay, that content on that sandwich that they posted blew up, so let's try and put our spin on it and recreate something similar here and then post a similar piece of content that's going to get people. And those two restaurants are mobbed. I mean, lines out the door for the last 2 years
You said these are clients of yours?
Yeah.
And this podcast is hyper local to Rochester.
Yeah.
Can you say who your Rochester client is?
Capone's.
Oh, Capone. Yeah. They fucking love
Brian. Brian does an incredible job. Yeah, people ask me why I'm there all the time. He is a client. But Brian's a little different. I create the content and he posts it. And I just show up and Brian's like, hey, I've got these 10 sandwiches that I'm making today. Mm-hmm. Every single week, it's something that he has come up with. It's not the same. Like, he's not like, hey, I need another 30 pictures of my big Milanese. Mm-hmm. Every week it's like, all right, here's 10 more 10 more sandwiches I just came up with. Mm-hmm. We're going to try it and see what works. I'm going to have you try it and tell me if you like it or not. And then, put the video out of the ones you like. And I mean, he's crazy busy, man. You go in there on a Wednesday for his steak sub day that he does on Wednesdays at lunch. It's stupid how busy it is.
Well, he just started posting. It's brilliant, but he's like collaborating with Jimmy Z. Jimmy Z was, do you know that name? Jimmy Z was, he had this like a legendary, we call them Hots joints in Rochester, places and stuff. He had like a legendary Hots place in Brockport, which is where the college is. And he was open till 4 a.m. So for years and years and years, that was where you went in Brockport.
Okay.
Till 4 a.m. to get your, fried food and garbage plates and stuff like that. Yeah. And he went out of he went out of business by choice. I want to make sure I credit him because he just said, I cannot do this anymore. Yeah. This is going to kill me. Yeah. And he's like in his mid 40s, he's young and he's like, this is going to kill me. But the Capone's guy, Brian, you said his name?
Well, Bruno is the one that runs it in Spencerport and they're on the west side. And then Brian runs the one in Penfield.
Okay, got it. Okay,
yeah.
Okay, so I think it's the west side one. I'm not 100% sure. I think it's the Spencerport one. Yeah. He collaborated with Jimmy Z. Jimmy Z had, famous garbage plate. He had a famous Mac salad. Yeah. And Bruno was like, we're going to start... make our Mac salad be Jimmy Z's now, and our garbage plates will be Jimmy Z's garbage plates. And I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, that's smart.
It's absolutely brilliant, Like, this guy had built such a name for himself, and then he's just poof, gone. Like, how hard it is. How hard it is to build a brand.
Yeah, for
sure. But it's maybe even harder to run a restaurant building a brand. It's like the hardest freaking thing you could do.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I just wish I was on a podcast this morning and the guy
cheated on me this morning. It's gonna
go. He asked me something similar, like, well, what's the advice you would give to somebody who wants to open a restaurant? And I was like, spend 6 months on YouTube University and go figure out everything you can learn about how to build a brand, how to buy, how to cook, how to set your menu up, all that kind of stuff. And then go see if you can go the fancy word stage in as many restaurants that fit that as possible. If you have to sacrifice a weekend a month with your family because you're going to go stage and work for free in a restaurant that's similar to yours beforehand to get a good sense, then do it. But the worst thing I think somebody could do is, I've got an idea for a restaurant. I've got a great name for it, which is always the dumbest name for a restaurant. And then they run out and get a bank. Especially nowadays, ChatGPT writes their business plan and then they run to a bank. And unfortunately, banks will give anybody that wants to open up a restaurant a loan. And, a year and a half, 2 years later, they're out of business in a massive amounts of debt.
Yeah.
It's a tough, tough, tough industry. I don't think nearly as many people get into it understand how much they have to sacrifice to be the owner and operator of a restaurant.
It's your whole life. You're giving over. You're just 24/7.
Right.
Yeah. It's most businesses, frankly. Yeah. So what's the future plan? I mean, you're looking at Eat Local New York. It's 2025. When you look at 26, 27, 28, you're adapting, you're staying, you talk about trends, what's working on social media and whatnot. Yeah. Like, what do you see for yourself and your business as being the way to grow over the next couple of years?
I'm not 100% sure just because, I don't know what the future of AI holds. And so I have my business partner and I, Mike Green in Syracuse, who's really smart guy, commercial real estate, and then he owns a couple food businesses in Syracuse. He and I just started a new media company called The Sidewalk, which is positive first content from the capital region to Buffalo. That's food and beverage, yes, but it's also like events and culture and just interesting things like that. And I'm not the face of it. And so I think a larger media company that can be really diverse and partner and sponsor with larger regional companies is to fund it is probably part of the future, is definitely the future for us. Eat Local New York won't spin that way just because I went the path of me eating food and saying, wow. So it's hard to me for me to like branch out and really go too diverse on that. People want to see me eating food. So
can I just say, wow is so much better than boom.
Yeah, right.
I like it better. I like it better.
But, you know, to be honest, I just don't know what the future of content creation is. I mean, I could take a still photo of you right now.
Yeah.
Okay. And then take a 30-second, 60-second audio clip of you saying whatever the hell you want to say, and then upload both of those into a free AI platform that would then give me a 90% realistic, 95% realistic video of you talking on to camera saying what you said in the audio file.
Oh, my God.
So I don't know, man. In 2 years, am I going to need to travel the state? Am I going to be able to pull everything and just have AI do it? Are people going to like that? I mean, you get into the super artistic crowd today and like tech, like sort of like nerdy crowd, and they're like super anti AI. If they see an AI photo online, they almost boycott that business. So, and artificial intelligence, like obviously it's incredibly invasive into our data and security and terrible for the environment. But I don't know if people are going to give a shit about that in America. They're going to be like, I don't care. It's, you know, wrote this email for me. I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be a really big thing. I mean, right now, to a certain extent, I think you have to be really advanced in it. But there's companies that have created AI models, Instagram models, and influencers that look as legit as it gets, who are out there promoting clothing and dresses and makeup and all this kind of stuff. And they're generating hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in sponsorships.
And you're saying most of us don't even realize it's not real?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, I don't think that's something like we're looking at every day, but
I see definitely... on TikTok sometimes I see where it says AI generated content.
Yes.
Will we get to a point where you legally have to put on there if you used AI? Like,
I mean, I think you do now.
Oh, it is already
legal. You do legally have. Okay. I mean, not in an email, but I think like on social you do. And, you know, like I could create an AI chatbot right now to respond to every DM I get on Instagram and Facebook, but Instagram and Facebook don't allow it. So
how insurmountable are the DMs for you right now?
Yeah, they get crazy. I mean, I'd say it's like 7 a day of like, go to this restaurant or can you give me a recommendation for some random obscure place? You know, it's like I used to respond. Now I don't even respond to like 90% of them. Just because I don't have the time.
Why'd you respond to me? How did I get lucky?
You sent an email.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how you got my email address, but you sent an email.
That's right. I did. I don't know how I got it either, actually. I don't remember.
But, yeah. So, and, you know, yeah. It's most of the rough DMs, I don't get too many of those. Those are all comments, you know, but yeah.
Is there any part of this at all? Any job. I love what I do here, right?
Yeah.
And there's parts of it I don't like. Is there any part of this you don't like?
Yeah.
We're on the highway again, you know, something like.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy driving. Listen, I mean, you've got a 2- and a 4-year-old.
I have a 6-year-old and a 7-month-old.
Okay, so
yeah.
You understand the, you know, freedom restraint, you know.
Yes.
We're not free men anymore,
No,
right?
No.
And so there is something about being able to jump on the thruway every day that makes me think that I'm free for a little bit.
It's true, it's true.
as much as I love my wife and my son, there's still something about that. And so... you know, so I enjoy the driving. You know, there's times I don't enjoy there's definitely probably 3 days a week I don't enjoy the eating. You know, it just becomes too much. And then, you know, you're sitting in a restaurant of an owner who's like never going to have, you know, they're not going to have this opportunity for a while. And so they want to send you 20 different dishes. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, oh, God, I just can't do this, you know. So that can be a little too much. And then really just the comments and stuff. Like there's the... You know, I it's sort of a funny joke, but like I'll be at home, you know, dancing around the living room with my wife and my son to Winnie the Pooh, you know, and you know, it's like, oh, life is so great. We love each other. And then my phone buzzes and I look down. It's like, I hope you die on the next chicken tender you eat. So
that's, you know, those terrible.
Or like the Interloop guys. I mean, a month ago, I opened up TikTok just scrolling on TikTok, and the Interloop guys have recorded an entire segment bashing me.
Aww.
And it's just like,
want to call him right now and tell him go fuck himself? Oh, like, excuse my language. I'm sorry. In front of the nephew. I'm like, kid.
I don't even know who these guys are.
Yeah, I know who they are.
You know, and so, and granted,
we could call them, tell them to screw himself if you want.
I mean, granted, they're like incredibly insignificant, but
yeah,
it's still just the fact of like, that can be rough where you've got people in the public who have no idea who you are, and you know they like have this incredibly like distorted bad view, or like not even just like bad view, but like actively like saying you suck, you know.
Yeah,
so
it's terrible. It is. Can I tell you, the Interloop guys almost got me in big trouble with like my single biggest client once.
Oh really?
Yeah, they posted a meme one time, and it was Tony Soprano choking somebody, and next to Tony Soprano's face they had Paul Guglielmo, yeah, and next to the person you're choking, they had like the Brighton Farmers Market or something. And it was because, and it's just, I know you don't know me, you're gonna think I'm such a dick after this, but basically I've had this sauce for years, right? And I tried to get in the Brighton Farmers Market, and I couldn't get in because it was too commercial. They want like farmers market stuff, and we're in like Wegmans and stuff, so they're like, we don't want like commercial items in our market. So like I did kind of like bitch about it once, and on the radio, I used to be on the radio, like, so it was when I was on the radio, and so they posted this meme, and I liked it. I thought it was, I was like, okay, all right, you know. And then my buyer called me, and he went, bro, no. He goes, no, we're not doing business with somebody who likes a meme where Tony Soprano chokes somebody to death. And so I went, I unliked it, I apologized, and I said, it'll never happen again, sir.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Interloop block, guys.
Yeah. I mean, I had the Eat Local card for 5 years, which is like the discount card thing, and I ended it last year, and I'm so happy I did, because I don't have to answer to a restaurant owner anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I had that, I was really worried about what I would say publicly about the industry or whatever. And now that I don't have that, I just feel like that's a pretty great thing to, like, you know, not be able to, like, I don't have to be really worried if a restaurant owner doesn't like me, you know? So
yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, it's good. All right. Well, cool. What did I miss? Did we miss anything?
I don't think so. I think we covered it all.
Let me tell your nephew something really exciting. Yeah. They have chicken nuggets with caviar on a chicken nugget where you're going tonight. Oh my God. You drinker at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. The smoked, if you get like a smoked bourbon, something, smoked Manhattan, I think.
Okay.
Really good.
Yeah.
All right, Anthony. Thank you for doing this, man. I appreciate it. Can I give you some sauce to go home with?
Yeah.
Please. I give you some sauce. I'm going to be the only person that's ever going to tell you what I told you down there. I can't have any film on our sauces. Right. Yeah. but I hope you enjoy. Thank you so much for coming. Have fun tonight.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.